When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It would be a waltz, but eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. Happy New Year, everybody. I'm so looking forward to this year. I'm feeling so positive about it. And a lot of it is because Wolves have, of course, been 3 games on the bloody bounce over this festive period. And joining me tonight to talk about the Everton game, I've got Tom and Stu. Boys, how are we both feeling at the moment?
Brilliant. It's brilliant being a Wolves fan right now.
I've there's no point in dressing up the fact that I've got no hair anymore. I'm wearing this cap because I obviously deliberately didn't go out last night because I'm 40 years old. So I decided to stay in and just watch the NFL like a normal Sunday with a few beers. A few beers then turned into a bottle of Prosecco to myself. when I turned that off, it was perfect timing because then when the fireworks came on with our Mayor of London wanking himself off for everyone to see in drone form, and then got rickrolled in front of the entire world. So that was a wonderful start. So my cap is here to blind me from the light. Not like the weekend, but just for the sake of it.
All right, Mike Skinner. That's a niche. Is that a niche reference? We started off really strongly here, haven't we? You've been talking about the Mayor of London wanking himself off in front of national TV. I've gone for a pop culture reference. We've not even hit 2 minutes.
In drone form. He didn't get his little car note for everyone to play with. But I was just saying that Mike Skinner reference is probably older than Tom. So
I was going to say, it's borderline slightly before my time as well. Just about. But should we talk football? Happy New Year, because we have got quite a bit to go through, and not just about the Everton game as well. And I appreciate it's been a couple of days. We usually do a show just afterwards, and obviously with New Year's we took an extra day, but I still feel like we're riding that wave a lot at the moment, because I think this was probably the best Wolves performance overall this of the calendar year. It was definitely the most impactful of Gary O'Neill's time in terms of what he's looking to get out of the team. So it seemed like everything went right on the night. The only thing that I guess did put a little bit of a sadder note on the proceedings was in terms of kind of the starting lineup. It kind of broke him a couple of days before the game around Mario Lemina, whose father unfortunately passed away prior to the game. He was spotted travelling back to France. He talked about it after the Brentford game, I believe, as well, that his dad had been in hospital the last month as well. So Tommy Doyle came in. Of course, we sort of send our condolences to Mario Lemina, of course. But one thing that I guess showed throughout it all, and it kind of leads us nicely onto the first goal, doesn't it? The amount of unity in this squad is up there from a team that's felt quite fractured in recent times. There's a feel of togetherness, and it was definitely sort of shown in the celebrations for the first and second goal.
Yeah, definitely. It was a good touch from Kilman. And for the second goal as well, just getting the shirt, it was a great touch. And it shows the unity of the team as well. and the club all together. So, yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. Talking about the goal itself, I think on one hand, it obviously looks quite scrappy because he's, you know, poked it in from 5 yards out. But I think what impressed me is that they kept, and it was the same for the third goal as well, I suppose, that, you know, they kept pressing and trying to get another opportunity and keep the ball live from the set pieces, even if the first kind of delivery wasn't quite as testing as it needed to be, Stu.
Yeah. I mean, you only have to go back 12 months, and if we had one man in the box, we'd be lucky, let alone have three or four. Mm. And especially that early on in the game, as we'd be kind of got used to sitting back and the old Nuno way of do nothing in the first half and then come out all guns blazing in the second and try and get something. But we never overcommitted in the box, even from set pieces. That never seemed to be a thing. So to have two defenders trying to tap it in from 3 and 4 yards out is brilliant. And it's almost like what we've been asking for 5 years at this point. And it's finally here. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I think the fact that, like, literally both your centre-halves are in the six-yard box on, you know, the second, third phase of play, just waiting for that opportunity, because Everton are a funny old team, is my polite way of describing it, because obviously they've been such, you know, they've been in decent form up until the last sort of week or so. But by gosh, we didn't half pounce on any mistakes they made the other night.
Yeah.
I thought we'd done really well in the game. I was looking at their recent results, and obviously they had, I think it was Tottenham away, and then they had Man City at home. You know, they're coming off the back of two really tough games. Obviously, they took the lead against City as well. And when Sean Dyche is managing, you know, you do expect his team to sit in and have that low block and make the game hard. And, you know, before the game, I was expecting like a 1-0. But yeah, I thought we'd done really well, and we just pounced on absolutely everything in the game.
Yeah, it almost felt kind of back to Nuno in the Championship days in terms of that kind of intensity and the dominance. And it was from literally every player. You know, obviously, you know, the forwards will get a lot of credit, you know, particularly like Mateus Kuna, who I kind of wish I'd said this in the Wolves Amnesty post yesterday, I did. But there can't be too many better players outside the top six, top eight teams than him at the moment. And we're a year on now, and he cost 40 million. And it feels like he's justifying that price tag now.
Well, yeah,
and has been for the last 2 months.
If you sold him, you'd get 60, 70, wouldn't you? No. At this point. So, yeah, at the time it seemed ridiculous, and probably about 3 or 4 months ago it seemed ridiculous. I mean, we did probably overpay for him as well, but we had to. So I don't think it's... You look at him now and you look at the performances he's putting in, you ain't getting that on the cheap, are you? Very rarely.
No.
And he's absolutely everywhere, and he loves it as well. The fact that interview he had with Gemma after the game for Wolves TV, where he's talking about loving it here, obviously, other than the weather. But hey, everyone's made his family and him feel all welcome and everything, and he just loves being here and the whole family thing. It's weird being on here and having things to moan about for a change. And him and his little smile. And we had it with when Costa was here and their little thing that they had, and they're teasing each other in the dressing room with trying to teach people English with the Joe Gomez thing and the locker. It seems like it's been building for a while, and they were only here for, like you said, a year ago. So to see him come on that much in a year under two different managers, to the way that he had put that performance in against Everton, let alone the one at Brentford where he ran himself into the ground and probably should have got a goal for it with that one that hit the post. Yeah, he's superb. He's absolutely superb.
Yeah, I think he's on. He's on 6 goals, and a lot of them have come in recent weeks, and he's very much picked up the Pedro Neto slack, so to speak. But he's on track to get double figures for us this season, more than, let's be honest, with his current form, and particularly with Huang off on international duty now. Yeah, we're looking at having two players who have got double figures for us this season.
Yeah.
And I my little head can't almost compute it.
I think it's a big thing as well. When Neto got injured, you know, he got stuck in straight away.
Mm.
And, you know, it's a good job that he started scoring his goals then as well. But no, I think he's only, 23, 24?
Mm.
So you've still got so much to come for him. So I think by the end of it, that 40 million, I think it's going to look a bargain the way he's going if he carries on.
Yeah, I think he is slowly but surely just become an incredibly influential player on and off the pitch. He's sort of said to June, like, he's obviously got a lot of charisma about him, and you can kind of see how he plays as well. That, you know, in theory, he's our most forward playing. You see him picking the ball up, in, you know, almost on the edge of the box because he's tracked someone back and he's tried to win the ball back, and he opens up for play. And it wouldn't, like, surprise me if, I know, like, in a cup match, let's say, if he rested Kilman and he rested Dawson and he rested Lamina, let's say, that he was captain.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, like, he seems to kind of possess all of those qualities. And, you know, we've got comments from you on YouTube. Big thanks to everyone watching live, of course, that, you know, his work rate is at elite level from what I've seen. And, you know, it sets that standard, doesn't it, for them? And he's got the work rate of Andy Keogh or whatever, but he also has the yeah, technical stuff that, you know, it, absolute light and day stuff. And, you know, we've got the stats up on screen for anyone watching on YouTube. And, you know, it's almost like he didn't put a foot wrong. You know, he only missed out on two of his passes. All his long passes were completed. He had a high touch percentage, you know, 94% passing. He created chances. It was almost like the perfect kind of individual performance in a way. But it wasn't just him, though. It is what I was going to say, because so many other players, and I'll try and get through as many as possible for us to wax lyrical about, but just turned up on the night. And, like, between, you know, today, Brentford, Chelsea to a degree, like, it feels like they found that groove, which, and that that really big element that's been missing at Molineux and missing from Wolves in recent months and even years, you could say.
Yeah, it feels like more like Wolves pre-COVID than ever. Everything after that March has been shit. It just has. And it feels like in the last week, it feels like we got Wolves back again.
Yeah. Definitely agree. I think as well, we played three games within 6 days. You know, these games aren't just, you know, a kickabout. This is top flight Premier League hard grafting games. I thought, like, the Chelsea game was a brilliant win. But then the Brentford game, I thought you could see that, you know, a few players were leggy. I thought we showed sometimes in the game, like, we were just happy to sit in. I thought it was a good performance there as well. We just sat in, defended the box. And, I mean, I can't remember the last time we scored 4 goals. And I think it was Watford away.
It was 4-0 Watford at home. And I believe the last time Wolves scored 4 in the away was against Swansea back in 2012.
4-4, yeah.
Yeah, when it was 4-4, which kind of just shows the lack of kind of firepower we sometimes have. But, you know, you could have picked a number against Everton. You know, obviously you had 2 disallowed for offside. But, you know, I don't quite know how Quang didn't end up on the score sheets. Because I thought he was fantastic. And I've seen a couple of comments saying, you know, oh, he was a bit selfish. But I sort of feel that your top goal scorer is allowed to be a little bit selfish. And, you know, there was a couple where he did the trademark dummy. And I think, you know, obviously, you know, he's had a bit of luck with that. But I know he got a little bit of criticism for not squaring it. But You've got to go for it, haven't you?
Yeah, you're not going to square it there. I mean, it was. You're talking about the one that he went near post and Pickford turned around for a corner. Is that the one we're talking
about?
Yeah,
he got fingers onto it, onto the post, yeah. But yeah, I think that was the main one, yeah.
Yeah, that was a world-class save. Yeah. I mean, anyone else that he would have beat? I mean, Pickford's a bit of a comedy figure in his own right, but he's a good shot stopper, and that was a great save. Mm. And he put power beyond that. It wasn't just a feeble attempt at the near post. It was a proper attempt, and it was a great save. And yeah. I think Dan put the still up. It would have took some doing on your wrong foot to, or the outside of your right to swerve it round from there to get into the middle of the box. So you can't blame him for having a go.
I mean, there was about four or five. I mean, I say pulling it behind because I did think he had a genuinely good game, and I was gutted that goal was ruled out for offside because that finish was beautiful on his left foot. But you know, there was about four or five chances where we just had about four players forward. It was like Everton were playing with 9 men at a couple of points where how we're just swarming them. And it was just fantastic to see. Something I did like in the first half, I say liked, actually, yeah, I had a lot of love for it, is when there was a little melee in the middle of the park. And I think something that we picked up before, Stu, is that this is a Wolves team who are a bit more emotionally calm in situations.
Yeah.
But I did love how Tommy Doyle just started a fight. He wasn't one who was getting fouled. I think it was Dawson who ended up getting knocked over. And just Tommy Doyle decided to push someone. And then he ends up going toe-to-toe with Onana. And then Jack Gomez just gets him in a headlock.
Of course. Of course he does.
So I'm amazed. Like, but I mean, it's like, I'm glad VAR didn't pick up on it. But it was just great to... it was just great. To see that little bit of, again, that extra bit of togetherness in a way. Because again, Joao Gomes, we've talked before, haven't we, that it can sometimes feel that it should be Lamina and Juan. And kind of whether it's Gomes, Doyle, or Bouba Traore coming in, they could all work with Lamina, but there needs to like be a level of kind of getting the maths to work with the other three. But I thought Doyle and Gomes, you know, against a sturdy Everton midfield, industrious midfields, but they're fantastic.
He's just stepped up a level in the last week and a half, Joe Gomes. He's always had it. We've seen the his skill level's always been there, but he hasn't necessarily been, I'd say, match fit, but maybe he's acceptance of the speed of the league, maybe a bit wanting sometimes. In this last few weeks, he's been on it. And like I mentioned in the group chat as well, there was a moment in the second half where he started punching the ground because he missed a tackle and he didn't win the ball. You think when you're loving defending that much, then I mean, fair play to you. And yeah, he can, as we saw at Southampton last season, he has got a strike on him if he wanted to go forward, but I don't think he wants to. I think just leave him alone. So it lets the creative players like Tommy Doyle play, and it lets Lamina have his more creative side to his game rather than just being a defender as well, as we've seen in recent weeks with his goal tally. So you are right, Rich. It's been Lamina plus one, and now it's either of them and Tommy Doyle. I almost feel sorry for him because he's almost like a kind of Alex Ray, Colin Cameron situation now, as we had back then with Paul Ince. So it's like, well, he's clearly got talent, and if we've got the graphic, I don't know if we have.
Passing one?
Yeah, the passing one that Wolves
played earlier. Unfortunately, I don't know, but it was bonkers, wasn't it?
And it's not,
I think
all,
it's 59, not, 60 passes? Something like that.
Not just sideways and backwards like people. Oh, well, when your pass completion's that high, not that that matters, of course. No. but yeah, I've got it here. It was, I don't know, but it's not going to work on there, is it? I mean,
no.
it's just everywhere.
Yeah.
So, but again, I thought he was superb, but no one talked about him because he just did his job properly.
Yeah, and I think he's kind of got that like quiet level of authority, and you know, I've seen bits and pieces of him at Sheffield United And obviously, being at Man City, you expect them to have a certain level of quality.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit apprehensive when we signed him. I thought he's going to be a decent stock player. He's definitely third, fourth choice. But it's like every game he plays, he's doing exactly what you'd want your backup midfield to do. And it's like to just continue to ask, like, why isn't he starting every game? And it's really positive to see that. I sort of think, you know, against Brentford in the Cup or, you know, in a couple of weeks' time, let's say, if you saw him starting with Lamina and Gomez dropped, or you saw, you know, if you saw that midfield duo again, you wouldn't go, oh, he's dropped him. You go, oh, there's something tactically going on of why we need, you know, and you wouldn't always have that feeling that it's a step down as much as I think maybe when he joined some fans might have felt.
Yeah, I think competition for places is always a good thing, but when you do have substitutes, you know, a lot of people expect the subs to come in and not do as well as the ones that start do. But I feel our bench is probably as strong as the people who start, really. I think Doyle proves that as well. And it was a tough game for him as well against Everton because of how physical it was. I mean, going against someone like Onana as well, you know, that's not very easy.
Yeah. And that's a point as well. Subs are not just shit players that can't go to the starting lineup anymore.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's doing it for the last 2 weeks with taking Semedo off, who has been excellent, just to keep him fresh. Just because you've got someone who's more than capable in Doherty and just who's fitter, who's not as knackered. So just let him play. On the other side, taking out Nuri off, who wasn't very pleased, was he?
No.
And good. They're supposed to be angry when they get took off. They're supposed to stay on the pitch. That's the whole point. If that was just Twitter nonsense, I don't know. But people moaning about that and let's get a life. but that is the thing. We haven't had midfield options for about 5 years because we've had two players in midfield, and one of them gets injured. Then it's always a downgrade. No, it's not.
Yeah.
It does feel like the floor and the ceiling of our midfield options is a lot shorter than it has been in recent years. And I think the variation as well is, I think, half a point I'm trying to make as well, that you know, they all offer something slightly different in a kind of hopefully fairly complementary manner. And I mean, the only one I sort of feel slightly bad for is Traore, just because, not that I don't think he's a good player, he's got the potential, just that he's just going to have to wait for his opportunity, unfortunately, which is a real shame. But you know, going back to the game itself, at halftime, obviously going 1-0 up, and, you know, we did good work to get the second one fairly quickly as well. It just felt so natural. And then, again, another recycled set-piece goal. We kept battling for it. You know, Doyle battles for it first, and then Aitnori, you know, brilliant tackle. Like, it gets lost, but he does the great recovery. Comes to Kuna, who, again, I don't know how deliberate it was to be to put the ball in there. And big old Craig Dawson prodding. It felt weird because it was like he prodded it home, Stu, in a football cliché's manner, but he did it too far out to prod it home.
Yeah, you can't.
Does that make sense? I think that's why it feels so awkward.
He's not a goal hanger, and it's not a tapping. It's something we've never seen before. A misdirect.
It's an outstretched leg from basically the edge of the box, it felt like. and I can't quite, I almost can't quite understand how he did it, to be honest. but I mean, side note on, you know, because I thought it was really good because actually, like, it highlighted about half the place we've talked about in terms of, like, that goal. We've had a great comment on YouTube, actually, set from Danny P, saying, Tom Kingston on Wolves Radio broadcast, only Craig Dawson could tackle a ball into the goal, which is what it felt like. But, yeah, quick side note on Wolves. Everton's, like, organisation and lack thereof of defending at the back was like just so bad for a team who have been doing so well. I don't know whether it's that they went three at the back or what, but it was like they tried to match Wolves up man for man. And I don't think I've ever seen Wolves just go for so many balls over the top because they just had the time and the space to do it.
It looked like what happens when we go to a basic four. They just can't do it. They just can't do it. And it was a rare King Deutsch defeat. And then I think they mentioned it on Match Today or Match Today Talk. I can't remember which one, but that he did drop a bollock by matching up because they don't play that way. They've got their players don't play in the back five. I mean, that's what you saw with Cody last season there, where he played in a four. Even though Cody and the playing in a four was contentious anyway here, but he played mostly in a four, and they're playing when they did play in a five, it was bad. So yeah. I don't know why he did it other than pure fear that we're better than them, and we are.
Yeah, and it just kind of continued showed throughout. I mean, even after that third goal, part of me kind of mentioned Tom, like against Brentford, Wolves had a really kind of good game management structure in terms of like they sat back, they took the pressure, didn't push too hard because they weren't being pushed too hard, but it felt like they kind of controlled the game. Whereas at home, just before New Year's Eve, it was just party time, wasn't it? And say Hwang had it, and then Neto comes on, and it's just it was just so fun to watch, wasn't it?
I think it was good as well. How many players actually come on? I thought it was good that pretty much everyone had a run out. Obviously, Gomez had that knock. Obviously, O'Neill since has said that he's okay to play, but that gives Traore a chance. Obviously, Doherty coming on again. You know, it just freshens the legs up, especially when you're playing such the amount of games in such a short space of time. Your squad depth is really needed, and let's be honest, we don't really have too much of it in certain areas. I'd say it's better from what we've had in recent years, like under Nuno. But obviously, you know, January now, we'll see who we can bring in. See what Gary O'Neill wants to bring in.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we'll touch on to it in a bit in terms of, I guess, where we're thinking January's leading us. I guess sort of the two card players, one I can't touch on. I mean, I've spoken about Hwang. It's, I believe, now effectively his last game he's played for us before he goes off to the AFC Asian Cup. South Korea in a group with Bahrain, Jordan, and Malaysia. I think I speak for everyone when I say this, but I hope they lose all three games. yeah, back as soon as possible.
Is that in the morning or at night, them times?
I believe they were screenshotted from my phone, so I'm guessing they're our time.
Yeah, but in the morning or at night? you'd think in the morning, wouldn't you?
I'm assuming morning, yes.
I might have to watch them.
Yeah, see how he gets on. But, you know, yes, he will be missed, but hopefully, and I guess this is where, like, Wolves of yore would have suffered from this, and we'd have promoted, like, you had a player injured at this point, whereas now it's like, oh, yeah, it's a shame we're losing Hwang for a month, but we've got Pedro Neto coming back. Yeah. And, you know, the goal was a shame because it was Sarabia who was offside, wasn't it, I believe? And just kind of happened all out of nowhere, didn't it? But the fact that, you know, we were still chasing and pressing them so high up the pitch with so little left. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of people to come in for your top goal scorer, Pedro Neto's not a bad shout, is it?
Yeah, and we've got Bellegarde getting some of his form back as well. He promised before he got sent off, which, and you think, okay, we need more than one, but you have got it in him, and you can move players around. You can play. You don't have to play with Sarabia. You can play a front two and have people floating around. I think that's and I know you mentioned the other Hwang's finish for the offside. I think in Tom's blog when he said it was a ruthless performance, and yet, yeah, the ball was in the net five times, and there were three of them were really well taken finishes.
Yeah.
And how, I mean, you've got to go back to what the Leeds game and the Bolton game at home in the Championship when we absolutely destroyed them.
Yeah.
And to have that kind of dominance over someone. And it's going into that game, you wouldn't have expected it, would you? And now we've got options off the bench and options to cover our player, one of our players of the year. Things are going too well, and I there's not enough wood in the house to touch.
Well, yeah, so, yeah, well, part of me,
Mr. Carnigan.
Part of me is like, what is going to go wrong? And you know, I'm not delusional by any stretch of the imagination. Well, I am delusional a lot of the time, but I am appreciative that a certain level of what's happening at the moment is form. And that's not to do too much of a disservice to Gary O'Neill and what he's implemented and things like that. But football can very quickly kick you to the curb, just to bring it all crashing back down to earth, which, you know, is a bit of a shame. But there's still kind of stuff that needs to be done. And I don't know if either of you two caught the match of the day coverage. But, you know, we were literally like last on.
Yeah. Mate, we're a three goal win.
Yeah, we're a three goal, and to be fair, there were good games on. I was like, yeah, Everton are pretty crap, aren't they? So okay, but Wolves were pretty good too. No, okay, fair enough. But well, yeah,
you know, so, on that, Rich, before you go, that match of the day coverage to not show that sweeping multi-pass Brazilian-esque move,
yeah,
which, yeah, because just because he didn't end up in a goal. They show it for everyone else.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, it was literally like they ran out of time. But, you know, they is it like 8 minutes they try and dedicate to each game or something like that? And then for the highlight one, they get slightly longer. And then the analysis is what kind of eats up time. It's like, just enjoy it. But then part of me is like, you know what? The less other people are talking about Wolves, the more, you know, we can kind of make the ascent, so to speak. But oh no, I think it's a really interesting time at Wolves. Lots of things happening. Of course, things are going good on the pitch. I think any of the talk about relegations kind of slipped off the table now, which is great. And like looking at the league table, it's kind of feels like we've gone from being the top of the bottom third to very much now being at the bottom of the middle third, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But it's still kind of quite densely compact. But, you know, there's now a 4-point gap between us and Fulham. But, you know, we are 3 points away from Man United in seventh, with, you know, 5 points away from West Ham in sixth. And, yeah, I know that there's a few teams in between us and things like that. But it definitely feels like we've moved into the next, the next tax bracket. The next league bracket.
Yeah, I think the position we're in, it's a funny one because, as you say, it's not that much of a gap from Fulham, but then you look on the positive side of things and you could sneak in into the top 10, you could sneak into those Europa places. But as we said, football's a funny old game, and if form doesn't go your way, say, like, I don't know, God forbid, a couple more VAR decisions don't go our way and stuff like that, then, you know, you can fall right back down again. Obviously, now, because of how much has gone against us, people will look at our position, like especially Wolves fans, and think, well, if we did get those decisions, you know, just imagine where we could be, and we could be flying. But I think, you know, we're halfway into the season now. It's still all to play for. We've just got to ride it out. We're nowhere near relegation. I don't think the season. Everyone like wrote us off. I never thought relegation was a worry for us. I think we've got too much quality, individually and now in a team. You can see that in the unity of how we play. As we say, Match of the Day didn't even put that clip on, and I felt like I was watching Barcelona, and it was Xavi and Iniesta in the midfield. Well, it special. So we just got to keep it moving, really, and just hopefully things keep going our way. But you never know with this game.
And for the first time this season, that bet that I had when Gary O'Neill was appointed that we'd finish in the top 10, they offered me £2 up on my like my cashew. I put 20 quid on when the day was appointed at 11 to 2. Yeah. It was £22 cash out for the first time. It's not on now because obviously this Liverpool game's on currently. Yeah. 2-1. But yeah, it was there. And when I got back in the car, I thought, ooh, in the positive, people are noticing now.
Yeah, it's quite the getting there. I mean, goal difference is the only kind of big thing, but you know what? That's because, as I sort of said, we're at the next bracket, and you know, like the way I kind of look at it is Bournemouth, okay, yeah, they've got a game in hand on us, but actually, it's 4 points with that amount of goal difference. Mm-hmm. Same with Fulham. You know, it needs to be a 6-goal swing, and that is still quite a lot. So it's still looking positive for me. And, you know, the fact that I'm now, when I'm doing all these slides and whatever, and, you know, I'm cropping the league table, I'm not doing it from 20th upwards anymore. It's quite a nice sensation. And I'm not even like, you know, doing even like from 17th and above or anything like that. So at the moment, and genuinely, because I tried to do it on, well, you know, within 2 games of all of those teams. Yeah, you know, it is a 2-game swing, which is pretty wild. And yeah, we got a break from league stuff next week, of course, because we will be up for the cup as always. But yeah, we are in January transfer window, of course. So I think it's going to be a really interesting transfer window for Wolves. Wolves have made an early move as well, which I don't think I was quite expecting, but Eastbourne Borough from Vanarama, there we go. They even tweeted us earlier. Eastbourne Borough announced earlier that they've reached an agreement with Wolves for the signing of Fletcher Holman, who is a 19-year-old centre forward. Again, there is potential fairy tale stuff within this. Potentially, you never quite know, but I mean, like, you'll see like the YouTube clips, and I mean, he's a grown boy. He's like a darts player, isn't he? I don't quite understand how he's 19, but so far this season, you know, not even 20. You know, he's got 5 goals in 17 games, and all kind of stuff that, you know, I read the Eastbourne Borough press statement on it. You know, it was like, oh, he'll be at the ground today and you can wish him goodbye and stuff like that. There's a level of, like, and I don't like to say a word, proper football about it all, but yeah. Stu, you were quite interested in the signing, weren't you, earlier?
Yeah, I mean, for every Luke Matheson, there's a Kilman, isn't there? So it can, if it's what, 1 or 2 million, it doesn't really matter. It's not, I'd say that's nothing, but for a Premier League club, it is, and even for us in our penny pinching ways, it doesn't really matter how much he is. I mean, it's a gamble. No. It's a gamble. It more importantly than anything else, at this moment in time, it lets Nathan Fraser go on loan to Shrewsbury, which we'll come on to in a minute, which is more important for us than anything else. So he fills an under-23 gap, under-21 gap, whatever. If he's good, if he's doing well for them, he'll get a chance in the first team, he'll get a chance in the cup the further we go. So it's a win-win for everyone. You look at it from his point of view, he's just... Was this his first year as a pro or semi-pro? Yeah. To get that move within 5 months to a Premier League side is Jamie Vardy levels of mental. If he's on the Red Bull and Skittles as well, who knows? it these things do happen. So if the kid's good enough, which some his finishing looks pretty good in the clip that we shared earlier, why not give him a chance? We've got, it's literally no one loses from this. Even if it doesn't work and he ends up at Bolton or Coventry or somewhere like that, good. It's better than being at Eastbourne. So if he goes back down to League Two, it's better than where he was at Eastbourne. So it's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, and not to sound sort of too derogatory about, you know, what is it, the fifth tier of football he's in?
Yeah.
You know, I'd hasten to bet that playing him the Wolves under 21s is going to give him a higher footballing, at least technical education anyway, because it must be sort of still semi-pro. Were you saying that he's effectively under?
Some are, some are.
It's still, you know, he's still going to have access to a lot of resources that he wouldn't have had access to. And no one, you know, Wolves aren't just taking a punt on a bloke because, oh, he scored 5 goals. They do occasionally do their research. And, you know, like, but you're right. It's like, at worst case scenario is we send him out on 4 loans in 3 seasons and he gets picked up at a League 2 level at some point and, you know, life carries on. Best case scenario, and he's got a Hollywood film. out of Jamie Vardy, but look at Michael Keightley. I mean, he made the I know it was a league higher. He was playing conference football,
yeah.
And
when you look at it in a way, you look at Mosquera from where we got him and yeah. Totti. I mean, Totti at Estoril. I mean, that's not an excellent level, is it really? So, all things considered, and they've got. I mean, he was great in the MLS. He was back in that photo, apparently.
Yeah. I must say, I did feel really bad when I saw that photo, and I did go, but where's Jason Tindall?
he's getting soaked at Anfield, that's what he is.
I was going to say 2-1 down at the moment. They're just, we're three. Clawing him back.
Oh, no, 3-2.
Is it 3-1?
3-2 now.
I always like it when we're doing live score updates.
Nice stuff into the hundreds of people who are watching live.
Yeah, I was going to say, it makes a big difference for people listening to our podcast in, you know, 8 hours' time. But anyway, so yeah, Wolves have made their first signing. But a couple of thoughts I had, guys, is that we're now, well, I'll say halfway through the season, new year, so to speak. We often do prediction shows and stuff like that and do them at the start of the season. But I almost thought like now, I say this as someone who always forgets to change their fantasy football team. And it literally got pulled up in a group chat I was on about, oh, let's have a look at the league table. I was like, yeah, I've not changed it since September 30th. So actually, like, I can play my wild card now. It's a clean slate for me. I can make that, you know, I can hopefully get into fourth place. There's five of us in the league, but I think I can get there. So anyway, I kind of thought we could have the same view on predictions is where I'm going, guys. So really quickly, who do you all think are going to end up as the title winners? Because I hadn't expected Liverpool to be quite where they are. But, you know, they are top of the league with, you know, 3 points clear at the moment as results stand.
It's a tough one, but I wouldn't say Arsenal. I don't think they've got enough experience.
No.
I think especially how young the squad is, recent run of form now, they've lost a couple more games, which they should be winning, especially if you're going to win the Premier League. Liverpool are doing really well. But I just think, especially now, Kevin De Bruyne are back with Man City, Erling Haaland being the robot he is, I don't think anyone's going to stop him. I think it'll be a tight race, but I think Man City will win it again.
Yeah, completely agree. For all the other reasons, it's not Villa. That's the main thing. So.
that's the main aim, and I sort of hope. I'm always annoyed when Villa win, but I'd kind of predicted after the Brentford fiasco, I'd sort of said, this is the point where the wheels are going to fall off for them. And it hasn't quite. And I don't genuinely sort of know how they are, you know, still hanging on the coattails, so to speak. But yeah, I go off goal difference as much as anything else. And the fact that, you know, Man City have a game in hand, but they're still on the same goal difference as Liverpool at the moment, says a lot. And, you know, they do this, you know, Man City do just kind of, they'll have a point like now where they'll win 10 in a row and we almost won't realize it. until it's kind of too late sort of thing. Relegation, guys, so at the moment, because you can't see it on the graphics anymore, it's currently Sheffield United, Burnley and Luton, with Everton a point above Luton at the moment. So I'm assuming we're all kind of pretty much set on Sheffield United getting relegated.
Sheffield United and Burnley.
Burnley, I think, are sort of two fairly solid bankers at this point. I guess it's out of Luton, Everton, Brentford, and maybe Forest. I think Forest have probably got enough just about annoyingly.
I want to throw another one in there. Palace.
You're going to throw Palace? Ah.
Yeah, I think if the good old L stays where he is, they could be sliding to an oblivion there, because it looks like a dead club. It looks like he's devoid of mice. They're feeding off scraps, and it needs something. They're probably going to go and change the manager tomorrow now and make me look stupid again. But yeah, Palace, I think Everton will be fine. I think Luton will probably do enough in a kind of weird way. So at this moment in time, I'd probably say between Palace and Brentford for the third spot for me.
Yeah, I quietly think Brentford, because I know he's been charged a long time. I think they do need to change. They need something to freshen up that club. Unfortunately, it just doesn't quite seem to be clicking. And whether it's an Ivan Toney situation, but yeah, I mean, when we played, I just didn't think they were that good. And Palace, you know, the only teams who have scored less than them are Burnley and Sheffield United.
With the players they've got as well.
Yeah. I say that, like, they didn't score three against Brentford, but was it three I got against Brentford? Yeah. It's going to be tricky, but part of me would quite like Luton to get a season, personally.
I'd like Luton to stay up, weirdly. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because they give it a good go. Especially, I watched the Chelsea game. You know, the last couple of minutes, it was just going at them constantly. But I don't think they've got enough quality to stay in the Premier League. I think that's the problem. I think they've got a lot of fight. They've got a lot of courage, but I just don't think they've got enough quality. I would like them to stay up, but I can't see it happening. I think the three that have come up, I think will go back down.
Yeah. Fair enough. And last one is top goal scorer. And interesting comment from Matt Bradley. City will come good. Haaland find his scoring boots again and end up top goal scorer. Bottom three, I think, will be what to ultimately go. I mean, the thing with Erling Haaland, he is actually current top Premier League goal scorer. And it feels bonkers, doesn't it? Because it feels like he just doesn't score anymore. But he has still got 14 goals in, you know, 2019 league games, which is still absurd.
Well, he's probably missed about five of them, mate. Four or five of them.
Yeah, he's missed games so far this season as well. So it is a bit bonkers. But he just isn't doing quite the level of, you know, output as there was, you know, last season.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's like because it was his first season and like he had a lot of media around him. It was like, oh, you know, he's back again. He broke the record, got the golden boot. It's kind of like it's just normal now that he just scores a goal a game at least.
Yeah, it does kind of feel like it's normalized, isn't it? I mean, same with Mo Salah. Like, you know, he's still got 13 goals. And half the time I go, oh, he doesn't really do that much. But he's, like, clearly phenomenal. So I sort of do think it's going to come down to one of those two, to be honest, unfortunately. I mean, minor shout-outs to Dominic Solanke, who, you know, has Spurs written all over him in terms of a summer transfer move, which will inevitably flop.
Mm. Yeah, he was into Arsenal as well, Warren. I think everyone who wants a strike, he just goes to Solanke. And Mo Salah's got another two tonight, by the way. So,
yeah, so that's pulled him up. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think because...
Oh, 4-2 now, by the way.
Yeah. Quang missing a month is going to stop him getting there. So I don't think we can put Quang in there. But yeah, I think it's the easy answer. I think Haaland for me.
Yeah. But yeah, let's, should we do some Wolves ones? Because I think this is kind of going to be more fun. So firstly, final league position. So bearing in mind, we are currently 11th at the moment.
I'm going to say 10th. And I'll be very happy with 10th.
Yeah. Mm. Right, you, Stu.
I think we'll probably finish 11th by goal difference just to piss me out of 130 quid. Just because that's what seems to happen. Yeah, it'd be anywhere between 9th and 12th. Now, anything less than that would be a bit disappointing, really. Is that greed? No, not for me. I think that's kind of where we are now. So, yeah, I think with a bit of actual luck on our side, I think we could get top 10, 9th, 10th, something like that. If our luck turns, which it can't get any worse, can it? So,
no. I was going to say similar to Jaffo, I'm going to go for 11th. I think that just that bit to go to the top half of the table, it'll be disappointing, but I think it still kind of shows that level of progress, and it's kind of like who we overtaking out of Brighton, Newcastle, and Chelsea, I guess, to a degree. And so half of me is like, well, Chelsea will get their acting together at some point. But they've been saying that for over a year now. So I don't know. But yeah, I still think 11th's a good shout. Wolves' top goal scorer. I kind of threw this in just because of the Quang dilemma. But do we all think Quang's going to end up top goal scorer? Or do you think that Kuna's going to quietly catch him up?
Kunya's
got a chance. I think if we had more games in January, I would have probably gone with Cunha, because I think he'll step in this month, especially with Huang being away. So I think it's definitely between Cunha and Huang, but I think the way Huang's playing at the minute, he's always going to be shooting, do you know what I mean? And I don't blame him. It's his best season that he's had for us by a country mile. So, yeah, I'll go with Huang.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting one. So, bearing in mind, we have already signed one player. Whether you want to class him or not, I kind of understand why you might not want to, because it's going to be a shame going to like the developments tool operation at Wolves. How many signings are we thinking we're going to get?
I'd go with, if we're not counting him, I'd say two more. Depending on it, if no one else goes out, I'd say two in.
Yeah, I agree. I think around two or three, maybe. But again, it depends who goes out. I mean, like for example, Johnny. You know, if you get a couple million from him, which you can reinvest, you know, we could look at more people coming in. But I think as of right now, with no one going out, I think we'll get about two or three.
There we go. Sorry, I was literally just waiting to sneeze for the entire time. now I'll just wait for fourth wall for anyone listening on podcast. Sorry, guys. I'm feeling optimistic. I'm going to say three. Just because I think we will get a striker in, a senior striker in, or someone who will at least play for the seniors team to effectively replace Silva. And then maybe another defender as well, and potentially a goalkeeper. Is the one which is kind of getting knocked about an awful lot, which I guess leads us quite nicely onto a series of tweets from friend of the Fancast, Johnny Phillips, over at Sky, who has said, so give me for a long amount of reading, but he said, Wolves' January transfer plans will develop over coming days. Fabio's exit is a relief to all parties. A bit of context just for everyone. O'Neill's great start has strengthened his and the club's position, which makes sense. And when Lopetegui left, the 23-24 season came about staying up, not the long term. Although urgent strengthening is not now required to the same degree, because we're not looking at getting relegated, O'Neill still wants the number nine. He's been knocked back with a couple of bids already, which is interesting. But still working on getting the right profile player in. Any signings would be required to make an immediate impact. Coaches recognise options off the bench are limited. So there's a, I guess, a degree of, like, we don't want to just buy too young and hungry, i.e. like your boy Fletch, who are going to actually be an experienced senior player. O'Neill has earned the right to have a big say in shaping the squad going forward. Significant work, more practical in the summer, again, makes sense. If Fosun choose to make competitive money available again, is a interesting term. So, unlikely to be big investment this window, unless outgoings allow for greater flexibility with fees being paid. Stu, I know you were very vocal in terms of this, and I have a couple of analogies as well.
I don't know where this came from. All I was saying, I mean, it all kicked off them all having a go at me again. I didn't even say anything bad. All I said was, it's there in black and white, in blue and white, whichever browser you use. It's there, clear as day, if they choose to put money in again. They did it last January because we were screwed and they had no choice. But by doing that, it proved that they can do it if they wanted to. By then not doing it again in the summer meant we had to sell loads of players because they weren't constantly reinvesting into the squad, which is what the whole profit and sustainability bollocks is all about. They either go one way of being self-sustainable and not putting a penny in, where then you could lose 5 million, or you put money in and you can lose up to 105 over 3 years. It's one or the other. Like someone, I don't know if it was you, who said, "Oh, why can't we have like halfway?" You probably can, but they're not going to just. This is the thing: they can't pick and choose and change their mind. They've got to stick to one philosophy or the other because you got to do it over the 3 year period or not at all.
Yeah, no. My sort of point is, it kind of seems to be the thing with particularly Wolves is, and it goes from a lack of cohesion at boardroom level and at sporting director level, which I think we sort of do now have. In Matt Hobbs, not related, it's either hot or cold. It's like, yeah, we're being sustainable, we're not spending money, we're going to try and, you know, recycle and whatever and try and gain money internally. And then it's like, ah, shit, we've not actually sold any players, so we don't have any money. And it turns out we're not very good. So, shit, we need to spend a load of money so we can keep the investment happy. And then kind of going in these cycles where actually there needs to be a level of continual investment within the team to the right degree. And I'm not saying there's like a magic formula for it. And arguably someone like Brighton, maybe even Villa. No, because Villa have had for Grealish money, I suppose.
Hmm.
They've spent more than that now. Way more.
Yeah. I mean, they've covered themselves. Yeah. But actually that kind of process of actually, not, we do need to keep investing in this team, and it's like, and bringing in good players. And I sort of think we've arguably caught with that in terms of some of the signings we've made. So Ait Nouri and João Gomes would be my two main ones in terms of players who have signed for a half decent amount of money, but their value is a lot higher than what it is now, from what it was when we signed them. Players like Mario Lemina, Craig Dawson, aren't going to get you big yields to a degree. Neither is Mateus Cunha either. Unless something big happens, we're not going to make a 100% profit on him. We will make a 100% profit on João Gomes.
Yeah, easy.
And it's easier said than done. And I know, but it feels like Wolves are kind of hopefully going to try and get onto a steadier track of, and whether it has to wait until the summer for fairly logistical reasons and having that bit of patience, like, look, yeah, you can have a striker, we're not going to spend more than 15 million this window unless we sell players, but there's 15 million pounds in the bank. But in the summer, that's when O'Neill's hopefully got more of a chance to, you know, change things around. Maybe Sasa Kljajic does go out on loan for a season, maybe You know, there are a few more kind of seismic changes in this team, rather than just being we either need to spend a lot of money or we don't spend anything at all for three seasons.
No, I'm not from Tube today. Ashma born and bred for the, one of the comments there for the audio people.
So yeah, I think for transfer stuff, I think it's interesting in terms of how much, say, Gary O'Neill's going to get, and you know, the to be what was the phrase that they Johnny used? It was a competitive, to make competitive money available again. And I guess, you know, you could spend 10 million on a striker from, you know, do we keep getting linked to a striker from Victoria Pletsen? But I don't know if that's via fans, so to speak. But yeah, anyway, if we sign someone from there and he gets you 3-4 goals in 6 months, and you go, oh, well, it's the model, it's the project. So, yeah.
I mean, just saying, if we had, I mean, I'd say to be devil's advocate that we had 20 million. That's not 20 million to spend on one player, is it? Remember, it's spread over 5 years. So you could get 5-20 million pound signings in on that if you did spread it out. So it's not like the be all and end all. We're not going on some kind of Newcastle like spending spree.
Just club of wolves.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I'd prefer it that way. I prefer it like what we said before, the sensible way. And you said about Matt Hobbs earlier, that he's not a moron like certain people, Savas, who know who they're doing. So I've got full confidence in them doing it. And would I rather that than spend 40 million? We've spent 40 million on Cunha, but that's worked. Yeah. We spent 28 on Guedes, and that stupid cunt's never going to set foot in Wolverhampton, is he? So,
yeah,
you look at him. And this is what I was saying about other certain players. I mean, you don't want to be spending on 20 million and 200 grand a week on players like Dybala, who doesn't want to be here. It's pointless doing that kind of thing. Yeah. So, going after people who've got some kind of inkling and, oh, yeah, you come here, you improve, you get your move like Jota did, bring it on. Do it properly. Do it that way.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree, and I'm sort of very hopeful that, you know, we are going to bring in a couple of players just to give that bit of reinforcement, and whether it's signing maybe another young centre half, even with the idea that Bueno pushes Dawson or whoever that bit further forward, and we've just got that extra option. Or, you know, he looks at playing Toto Gomez left wing back as a potential option if Aitnori inevitably gets injured, or when he's at for African Cup of Nations, or even like another right wing back, because, you know, the drop off from Smedo to Doherty is quite telling. You mentioned Johnny as well, and, you know, it's very clear what's going to happen with Johnny. You know, what 1st of January now, aren't we? So he's still under his
ban,
for want of a better term. But yeah, if he isn't sold in the next month, I guarantee it, 1st of February, Wolves will do a post saying his contract's been terminated.
Yeah.
It's a bit sad to see, but then we are like buggered if Semedo gets a ban and we're left with Doherty, and Doherty's not up to scratch. So, there's a couple of areas, isn't there, where you can see Wolves, you know, try to pick out, you know, someone who might just challenge your squad.
Yeah, like you say, I think that right back area is definitely one to look at. But I think as well that comes into the academy as well. I mean, you look at like Dexter Lemakisa, for example, who's at Rotherham, and he's smashing it. So, you know, you look at your academy lads who you've got, who are going out getting the minutes. You know, if they're proving good, why not give them a shot? Keanu Hoover as well. I know he's had some spells here, and then he's gone on loan and done well there, and then hasn't really done the business that much in a Wolves shirt, I wouldn't say, from my in my opinion. I think there's a lot more to come from him, but again, you've got to want players who want to be here and who want to play for the club.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. So I think it's going to be an interesting transfer window, but hopefully at the moment we can keep this positivity through the transfer window and we're not on the 31st of January pulling our hairs out when we do our transfer deadline day special, as we so often do. But I just feel like a very apt point to end the show. So once again, Happy New Year, everyone. Big thanks to everyone who listened throughout 2023. And we look forward to having your support once again in 2024. Make sure as well you keep up to date with all things Wolves Fancast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and also on our website, because Tom has been smashing it, doing lots of previews and review blogs as well. So do make sure you go check them out. Until next time, though, it is goodbye from Tom.
Goodbye. Thank you.
And it's goodbye from Stu.
Bye, everyone. Happy New Year again.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next time.